A North Belfast man is so determined to stop young people risking their lives with drugs that he has made an extraordinary gesture. William Burns recently stunned an audience when he held up a small plastic bag containing the ashes of his 23-year-old son, Jamie. He had died in November last year after taking just one ecstasy pill on a night out. William has now launched a hard-hitting new campaign called One Pill Will Kill, which has support right across the community, and he's here with me in the studio. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Faye.
Also with us, Tina Patrick from the North Belfast Police and Community Safety Partnership. Good morning to you as well, Tina.
Good morning,
Penny. Tell me first of all, William, about Jamie. What kind of a lad was he?
Jamie was 23 years old. He worked 5 days a week. He worked from the BT Tower Centre. He left the house every morning at 7:10, home every night 6:05. On a Friday night, Saturday night, he went out with his mates. He went to football matches, went to concerts. Just a typical 23-year-old. Never had the police at the door. Don't even think he was ever in a fight. He was just a normal 23-year-old.
And did you worry about Jamie in terms of drugs at any point?
Well, no, not really, to be honest with you. And I think that was one of my mistakes, because we had the conversations, obviously, as you do as you get older, about drugs and stuff. And he had came home early from parties. And when I had asked him why he was home early, he'd said, oh, they've started to do stuff and take coke and whatever it was. He says, I just came home because I'm not into that, Dad. So I just naturally thought, brilliant, that's it, one thing less to worry about.
Yeah, because some parents will be listening to you this morning and they'll think, well, my goodness, what about my own kids? And yep. Are there any signs that I should be looking out for? But they weren't really there with him.
No. on the Facebook page, hashtag One Pill Will Kill, that's one thing that I try to say. I try to let the parents make sure that, even though if they're 99.9% sure that their son or daughter doesn't do drugs, just to sit down with them, have a chat, bring up Jamie, let them read some of my posts, because I believe that if my son had realised what the dangers were, had off realised what he was leaving behind, the devastation, he wouldn't have done it.
Tell me what happened, or walk us through what happened in November.
19th, it was a Saturday, he wasn't supposed to go out, all his friends. Jimmy was a type of fella, and this is what I'm trying to say as well, excuse me, didn't matter to Jimmy if you were Protestant or a Catholic or Chinese or anything. If you liked football, if you liked music, then basically Jimmy was your friend. So his main group of friends had been away to Madrid for the weekend to watch football stuff. So he had decided he wasn't going out, and then all of a sudden he told his mum that he was heading out with people that he used to work with. So away he went, 8:30, walked out the door. His mum shouted at him, be careful. Yep, no problem, I'll see you later. And that's really all we knew until the police, we get the dreaded knock at the door that every parent's worst nightmare.
What time was that at?
3:25. I still wake up at that time on a Saturday night, believe it or not. Must be something in my body clock.
And did you know when that knock came at the door?
No. I thought it was him. I thought he'd forgotten his key, the usual. Drunk, forgot his key. So when I opened the door and seen the two police officers there, I said to myself, it just didn't dawn on me. And I went, yeah. And I said, William Burns, yeah. Have you a son, Jamie? Yeah. And I looked over at the car. I expected him to be in the back of the car, saying, no, he was drunk. We picked him up here and brought him home. He was wandering. Or he says, there's been an accident. And I says, right, okay. in my mind, I was thinking, because I'm a taxi driver, I've seen everything basically in the city. There's not much I haven't seen. So basically, I thought maybe somebody's hit him or he's fell or whatever, right? He was drunk. He asked me, right, okay, lads, what kind of accident? What do you mean? And he says, the hospital's telling us it's drugs. Well, I just went, what? Drugs? Are you sure? Yeah, that's what they're telling us. So basically, get up and get ready and get up to the hospital. And as soon as we got into the hospital, we were shown into the dreaded side room. And sister came in and explained that it was very serious. And Jimmy had taken, one of his friends had came forward and said Jimmy had taken a tablet and he had taken a tablet, but he was okay, but Jimmy wasn't. But even when you hear those words, you still expect to go in and see him, and he's sitting there. And
were you on your own at this point?
No, the wife was with me. And you just sort of expect him to be sitting there with the mask on or unconscious, but wired up the machines and everything would be okay. So the sister was coming in and out over a period of time, telling us, you know, this is what's going to happen. And then the doctor came in. He was brought in from home, and he came in and introduced himself and explained the situation as well. And then they said that they were going to try and move him to ICU to give him dialysis, try and do his blood. And did we want to see him? So we went before he went. So we went, yeah, fine, dead on. We went and seen him, and I'm telling anybody out there, see anybody that thinks that drugs is good, and I'm not a stupid man, and I know I will not ever stop people taking drugs, and I will never ever stop all drug dealers, but all those, if I can save one person, then that would be me happy. Going into that room, and the sight of your son or your daughter lying on a hospital trolley with their eyes taped shut, which was actually the worst for me. The blood on the floor, the needles, the tubes coming out of his arms, the breathing tubes in his mouth. Honestly, if you could transport someone to that moment in time, back at that moment in time, I guarantee you, they'd think twice about drugs. It was absolutely horrendous. Myself and my wife both had a word, kissed them, told them that we loved them. I pleaded with them to come back, and I'm not a religious person, but I pray to every God and that exists to send them back. But he was burning, you know, he was really, really warm, and you could feel as soon as you touch him how warm he was. And then we were back into the room again. And then the sister came back in about 10 minutes later and says, look, we're not going to be able to take him to ICU. He's not stable enough. We can't move him. And we went, right, yeah, okay. But even at that, you still think, you know, he's going to be fine, he's going to be fine, he'll be fine, don't worry, don't worry, don't worry.
And when you were in that room with him, how long were you there? How long were you able to stay with him?
A couple of minutes, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, not even 5 minutes. We've seen him, we actually seen him. Because when we went into it was just the accident and emergency bit, so obviously he was just in the one single bay, but there must have been 10 people around him at least. And then obviously when we went in, sort of just moved away from him so we could see him. Fantastic treatment to get at the Royal. There's nothing that they could have done anything different. But as I say, we're back in the room, and then the doctor came in, and the wife was on one sofa and I was on the other sofa. And the wife came, the doctor came in, sorry, and sat down between the middle of us, down his hunkers, and just says, look, I'm sorry, this, I don't know how to tell you this, but he's gone. And it's just one of those moments in your life when you hope that nobody ever, ever has to live it. Because my sister had arrived up this time, and the youngest daughter had arrived up. And my sister was sick in the bin. And the wife and my other younger daughter both started crying. And I was just completely stunned.
What's going on in your head? Because obviously it's every parent's worst nightmare. And then to be woken up in the middle of the night and all of a sudden you're in ICU, you're in the Royal, and you have a few minutes with your son. You don't even realise that you're saying goodbye, and then he's gone.
Shock, completely. It was complete devastation for me. Complete devastation. There is a lot of stigma attached to drug deaths. When you hear about drug deaths on radio, TV, and there's a lot of people think that it's only homeless people that die of drugs, or it's drug addicts or overdosing, but it's not. It's today's culture is completely different from when I was younger.
Did you realise when you had those few minutes with him, when his body was burning up, did you still think there was hope there?
Yeah, of course you do. Never give up. Well, the wife's always watching these medical programmes where people have been given the last rites and stuff and have came around, so you always say to yourself, it's going to be, he's going to go in here and he's going to be fine and everything's going to be okay. He's not going to die. He's my son. He's not going to die. He wouldn't do it. No. But drugs.
What happens then? Because your life has just crumbled around you.
It has.
Out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And what happens next?
Well, I came home. And we had went to bed to try and get some sleep, because obviously we'd been up from early, and I was lying there and I just couldn't sleep. Something inside me just told me to get up. I heard the voice actually in my head, and it's the same. I'm not religious at all, and I heard the voice in my head say, get up and write. So I came downstairs, and I was just a normal Facebooker who would wish people happy birthday or happy anniversary, and that would be me, usually. But this time I just started writing. I can't even remember writing the first one. All of a sudden it was, boom, it was there. So I posted it on my wall and posted it on another wee group I was in, Born and Bred in Belfast.
And what kind of responses were you getting to these posts?
Fantastic. That's one thing I can say. Every single person commented. It was fantastic support, words of encouragement, because it was sort of from a different angle. It was from the grieving. I was writing it as a living diary.
Because when we lose someone, and then we go back to the house where we all shared together, all of a sudden, everything in that house that was just normal day to day, whether it's someone's pair of shoes or a hoodie or their toothbrush, everything then becomes a reminder.
It does. And even I still, 22 weeks on, it's exactly the same. Same everywhere. The first few weeks were a blur. Went into town just before Christmas to try and do a bit of shopping. And we went into Castle Court and ended up having to come out. I couldn't. People were coming towards me and I was panicking, and I just couldn't do it. Called in the police to get a lunch and I couldn't even sit in the place, because everybody was laughing and joking. It was coming up to Christmas, and I was saying to myself, why are you laughing? My son's dead. Why? You shouldn't be laughing. You should be grieving like myself. But it's like everything else, life goes on.
Life goes on, but it doesn't make it any easier for you.
No. There's been a lot worse people, a lot worse things happen to people than myself.
Tell me what, because if people haven't seen any of the pictures of your campaign, which we'll come on to shortly, they might not have any idea what Jamie looks like. And sometimes people have a preconceived idea of a drug user, as you suggested, or someone that, whether it's once in their life or every day,
when really the reality is it's just a normal guy. So just so people can get a picture of your son and what he was, what he looked like.
Well, my Jimmy was 6 foot tall. He was bigger than me. He weighed about 13 stone. So he was a big lad. He would have made a good rugby player. We both coached football down at the Crusaders. Fantastic club to be able to coach at. Just a normal 23-year-old for me. He's like clones nowadays. You go into town now and you see all these lads and they've all the beards and the hair the same way, but like yourself.
I'm not talking about my beard. It's a bit grayer, but to you, this was your son. This was your pride and joy.
Yep, he was. And he was very quiet. Jimmy was very quiet until you get to know him, and even the people that worked with him, the girl came down after he had died, and we were talking, and she says he worked in a police call center in town, and she says like even when he first arrived, they actually had to take their earphones off to hear him because he talked that softly and that low, you know, until you got to know him, and then you couldn't shut him up, and that was the type of fellow he was, you know.
Tell me then how you moved from that to the campaign One Pill Will Kill. Was that an automatic thing for you?
No, definitely not. Obviously it happened over a period of time. I was contacted by a couple of girls out of the PUP office who were actually, believe it or not, were the only ones of our political parties, they actually, which is a very sore point to me at the moment, to actually contact me. They asked if we were okay. I live in North Belfast, and there are numerous offices from various MLAs. Not one person can hear me, but these ones. The PUP, and they just asked if everything was okay. I met with a couple of girls, Shaz and Corinne. They obviously had read my posts on Facebook, and I had said, my main aim is I don't want people in 6 months' time, and I've said so many, many times, to turn around and say, do you remember Jimmy Burns? And for the other person to say, who? Jimmy who? I want them to turn around and say, yes, Jimmy Burns, that's One Pill Will Kill. Yep, his dad saved a lot of people. Brilliant campaign, brilliant. Yeah, and I know that he hasn't died for nothing.
Where did the idea for the campaign and that slogan come from?
Well, the One Pill Will Kill was my what I had said at the start was One Pill Can Kill. But then we had changed it to One Pill Will Kill because what I'm trying to say is you could take a tablet 20 times and on that 21st time, that one tablet is the one that kills you. It only takes one pill. And if it's wrong, if it's bad, if it's mixed with the 101 other different things that it can be mixed with, then it will kill you.
And you just don't know?
You just don't know. I have had parents on the phone to me, one actually in particular, a 13 and a 14-year-old, and they had taken half of the same tablet, half. Both ended up in hospital, two completely different reactions. And that's the same tablet.
Tell me about when you brought the plastic bag with Jamie's ashes in. Mm-hmm. Because that obviously was done to try and make this real to people who didn't know Jamie or you.
Yes, it was brutal. Yep, 100% brutal. But 100% it got everybody's attention. And it made everybody sit up. I could sit here all day, Vinny, and talk to you about what the drugs are mixed with and how bad they are and blah, 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 everything. But if I bring out my son's ashes and what I do is bring him out, let you hold him and say, that's what happens when you drug take. That's what happens if you take a wrong pill. Do you want to end up there? I've been, as I say, I've been to about four, five, six people's houses to their kids and done the exact thing to them. Yeah, it's frightened them, and yeah, it's brutal. But at the end of the day, drugs are brutal. There's no second chances with drugs. Very, very rarely do you get second chances with drugs. So, touch wood. Everyone has stayed away from it that I've spoken to.
Well, my goodness, Tina, it really puts it, it makes it so real when you hear William talking about that, because it's so easy to see headlines on the news or read it in the paper and to, yes, take it in, think that is terrible, but to move on and to forget that these are real people, real lives, which are just changed forever.
It is funny. And I mean, when I was contacted in the contacts that I am a mental health counsellor, as well as an independent member of the PCSB in North Belfast. And when they came to me with this campaign, it ticked every box. I mean, it was community-led, it was around community safety and community engagement. And most importantly, it was in collaboration with all our partners, the PSNI, Probation Board, Youth Service, the local politicians that sit on the board. So everybody was involved and everybody was in agreement that the campaign should happen. It did take a while to get it up and running. Obviously, I mean, we were working with the family and they came first in all this to prepare them for the day that the launch would happen. And in the room, we had everybody that we needed there. We had the local community in the Hoopin Centre. We had Loyalist and Republican former prisoners. We had all the political people that we needed.
Because when it comes down to it, we are all the same. There are plenty of things that divide us or separate us in life, but in death we are all the same. You've seen the impact that William holding up or showing people those that bag of ashes can have.
Yes, and it had a great impact on the people that attended that day, because, I mean, we had people who were representing young soccer teams, GAA teams, and in fact, Father Gary himself said that ordinary people who brought together the amount of people that were in that room really should have an influence on the MLAs in Stormont, and it would make them sit up and say, we need to do something about the stalemate that's going on in Stormont at the minute, because drugs in our communities need more funding. There are community groups going under who deliver services because the politicians can't sit together and make things happen in Northern Ireland.
William, I noticed you have a fairly new looking tattoo on your arm. Tell me about that.
Yeah, it was just one of those things that myself and Jimmy, he had a few tattoos. And my father had tattoos in his arm, and I always remember them. And you're talking in the 70s when they were used to scab and bleed on. Ugh, never. But Jimmy used to have tattoos, and he used to give me a bit of stick because I wouldn't get one.
And you've got a portrait of him on portrait your of him, upper
yeah.
arm.
And the 4/20, the actual 23, there's his ashes, or in the actual 23, they mix the ashes with the ink and put it in. So you can actually, when you feel the tattoo smooth, and then you go down the ashes, you can feel, or down the 23, sorry. You can
yeah,
feel
forever 23.
Yeah.
Some people, William, might be listening and ask, when we are trying to grieve, sometimes part of that is moving on. Is this helping you?
It is, yeah.
Or is this making it almost more difficult because you're always talking about it and you're trying to make people aware by talking about what happened?
I could so easily, Finny, just sit in the house, put the TV on and just day by day by day do the same thing. But I don't want to do that because my son meant something to me. I don't want my son, just his death, not to mean nothing, you know. There's a lot of problems with drugs out there that people don't realise. 21 weeks ago, I was exactly the same. Unless drugs came to my door, or unless something happened to someone that I knew, you sort of just shrugged your shoulders and get on with it. It was only like what I've learnt in these past few weeks would scare you.
Well, finally, just before we go to the news, William, if there are people listening, whether it is someone that might use drugs themselves or a parent or a friend of someone that does, explain to them the aftermath of now what you and your family have to live with now that Jamie is gone.
Well, the best way I can describe anybody that, to anybody that thinks drugs are good or drugs are okay, man, picture the scene. It's 4 days after my son died. I had to go to identify his body. I went into the morgue and you go into the room with the police officer and the morgue technician comes out, tells you what's going to happen. There's a window in the middle, the curtain. He goes in, pulls the curtain back, and there's my once 23-year-old, full of life, laughter, fun, having a laugh, son, lying on a cold metal table in a black body bag. No life, completely dead. Picture the scene, and then stand up and tell me drugs are good and drugs are fine and there's no problem with drugs.